In this episode, we'll find out why Harmony Haven is not so harmonious, and Justine takes us on a slow road to hell.
Welcome to Gay Mystery Authors with Brad Shreve, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talents in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. Plus, Justine Adamek is here with her weekly recommendation.
Hello, Justine. I hear that you have Grant Atherton that you're going to review for us today.
I am. He's got a cozy mystery series called Elder's Edge. And once again, I'm going to be reviewing the first book in that series so that people can start at the beginning.
Have you reviewed any cozies before?
No, we haven't. I'm looking forward to this review.
So am I. I want to hear it.
Cozies do not get thrilling recommendations, as you might guess. This one has an intriguing recommendation, also a crackerjack recommendation, because they weave together a lot of different tales. Not so much mysteries, but there's one mystery that spins into another mystery, and as well as a romance. So the main characters are a forensic psychologist, a police detective who has, and I can't recall what they're called in England, it might be a detective sergeant, but he is in the homicide investigation unit for the county, which I just don't remember what the counties are called in England either. All our English listeners will be particularly annoyed with me today, but especially after I blew up cricket earlier in the season. And then we have the female best friend who's running the local hotel. And all three of these people have grown up together in the town. The woman is running the hotel, but the other two have moved on. The police investigator, the murder and homicide investigator, is moved to the county. So this town is still in his jurisdiction, but he's moved away. And the woman calls the forensic pathologist to come down because his father is dead. So she says she hasn't seen him for a while. He comes down, knocks on the door, gets the curate, his father's a vicar, gets the curate to open the door, and there's his father dead of a heart attack. And of course, you know, he's thrown back into a relationship with the homicide investigator because it turns out he didn't have a heart attack, but he was strangled. And they rekindle their romance. The vicar was very disapproving of his homosexuality. And so he left for London, leaving the young love behind. And the female running the hotel always is working on getting them back together. And by the end, they do. But it does not take away from the mystery at all. It adds a lot of flavor to the mystery. They butt heads over how it should be investigated. And the forensic psychologist is used to questioning people and knowing what their motives are. And so he keeps inserting himself into the investigation, not so much as an amateur sleuth, but as somebody who is part of law enforcement up in London and kind of annoys Nathan down here in this small little town. This is the first book in the Elder's Edge series. It's called The Slow Road to Hell, a Gay Murder Mystery. And the second book is called Dead Faint, F-E-I-N-T. He has said that he's going to write a third, and we haven't quite seen it yet. He published the first one in June of 2017, and then the second one in November 2018. So it looks like it's taken about a year and a half to get them out.
That's not too abnormal.
Yeah, you know how it is to get those second books out.
That I do. I've been working on mine for some time. I do have a question. You may have already said, what era does this take place in?
Modern day.
Okay, it's today.
It's today. Yes, it's all those vicars and curates and direct detective sergeants because it's set in England. It's a small town in England.
So he gets an intriguing and a crackerjack recommendation. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. I guess last week I gave out, or 2 weeks ago I gave out a threesome, and this one got a double. So as you get extra categories, Some things don't fit quite in one or the other.
Well, I like Cracker Jack because it's fun.
It is fun. It's got the toy at the bottom.
Well, so before we get to Requeered Tales, I have a question for you. Do you like grocery shopping?
Absolutely not. I don't think I've been in the grocery store forever. I make my husband and my daughter go for me. And then I have to wait around for them to go. I can't just say, would you go to the store now?
You know, I don't like grocery shopping either, but some people love it. But even if you have the time or don't have the time.
Or you don't, or you, the people who grocery shop for you don't want to go for a couple of days. And I really want something. How do you think I can get something today?
Well, to get something today, what you can do is call Instacart and they can have your delivery possibly within an hour. So there's no long waiting to get a delivery. So if you love to grocery shop or you hate to grocery shop, sometimes it's hard to have the time. You know, sometimes you and I barely find the time to record these segments.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how that goes. You know, I looked at Instacart. Not only do they have grocery stores, they also deliver from places like Total Wine.
They'll bring liquor to your house if you just need a belt or you're having a party.
That's right.
Well, with Instacart, our listeners can save themselves the hassle and a whole lot of time by having their shopping done for them for one monthly fee. And that's right. They don't nickel and dime you with every individual shopping excursion. And right now, our listeners can try them for free with a first delivery of only $35. And all they have to do is click the banner on our show notes on the website. So I hope they give it a try, because not only will they save themselves some time, but they'll also be helping to support our show.
Sounds great, especially with the holidays coming.
With the holiday time coming, I don't care how much you love to shop, who the hell has the time?
That's great.
So what's going on with Requeered Tales?
The first book we're releasing in 2020 is In the Game by Nikki Baker, and it's one of the earliest, if not the first, Black lesbian mystery.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's a real coup to get her on board.
That's exactly what I was going to say. What a win.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to that one.
Sounds great. I think it's up for pre-order already.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, I'll get on with the interview.
You know, the next week's my year-end review.
And they're all 5 stars, aren't they?
Oh, definitely. Are you kidding? If I see a book that, you know, is pretty good, but not 5 stars, well, I just don't put it on air.
Well, there you go. So if you want to hear a list of 5-star ratings from Justine, listen to next week's show. It's going to be outstanding.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. Take care, Justine.
Goodbye.
You can keep up with the Gay Mystery Authors on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Links are on our website, gaymysteryauthors.com.
Born in Indianapolis, my guest Andrew Schultz currently lives in Brooklyn. He began writing at the age of 7, but took a 20-year detour as an actor in both theater and television. He received his master's degree from the Actors Studio Drama School, where he was encouraged to write his own stories. His first novel, The Homos of Harmony Haven, was originally released in a serialized format from January through June of 2019 and is currently available to purchase. Welcome, Andrew. I'm happy to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Brad. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And happy holidays.
Same to you. Same to you.
Well, let's get started by talking about your novel, The Homos of Harmony Haven, which I love the title.
Okay. Thank you. It gets a lot of attention.
Well, and that was a smart move on your part. Give us a breakdown of the story.
I always say, so basically you've got 55-year-old Sebastian Seaford, who is a self-proclaimed self-help guru, who meets and he announces his engagement to 23-year-old Alex Reynolds just 6 months after the death of his husband, which immediately sets his whole family to becoming suspicious. Yeah, that's the gist of it, you know, and it goes from there. He's got a detective son, he's got an alcoholic daughter, he's got a very vengeful and vindictive ex-wife. So yeah, the homos are not necessarily harmonious.
And we'll get a little deeper into it in a little bit. you originally did release the story at, didn't release the story as a novel, but you did it in a serialized format on a day-to-day basis.
I did.
Can you tell us about that?
Sure. I always knew that that was what I wanted to do. Actually, back when I started writing as a child, everything I wrote was serialized. Now, of course, now everything is serialized, like all of our television is, basically. Anything from Lost, you know, Friends was essentially serialized. You know, nothing necessarily has a beginning, middle, and end. You know, storylines go on for weeks on everything we have on Netflix and Amazon and what have you. But back when I was a child, we had soap operas, which my grandmother, my mother was a single mother, so my grandmother would pick me up from school, and I would essentially watch soaps with her from pretty much the age of 5 years old. And there's also the classic science fiction series Doctor Who was told usually a story would be over 4 or 6 parts, so it would air every night on PBS. And so I just loved serialized storytelling. And so I always wrote that as a child. I wrote all sorts of different series. Like I said, or I think you said, beginning at the age of 7, I started writing these serials. So when I went back to writing again, I knew I wanted to do something that was serialized. And I knew the difficulty that would be. And how do you promote that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
On your own. Armistead Maupin. I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly. I pronounce so many different ways. Oh, yeah, did I? Good. It's like Streisand, you know, knowing I've heard it so many different ways, and she gets so mad when you say her name wrong, Barbara.
Well, actually, let me just say, the way he's pronounced Armistead Maupin is the way I've always heard it. I can't speak on his behalf.
Great. Sure. Certainly. Right. Right. So he had, you know, obviously, you know, it was published in a newspaper. So, in a newspaper, daily newspaper. So, you know, you had it. It reached an audience. But trying to find the audience for this on the internet, you know, without any budget or without any big money behind you, was an interesting challenge. And it was moderately successful, I would say. It was successful enough for me to, you know, continue going on with it. So, and it was a thrill and a joy for me to get the emails from people or the social media comments on Fridays. When they're like, you know, oh my God, I have to wait the whole weekend to find out what happens. Because the joy is, is creating those Friday cliffhangers that keep people on the edge of their seat all weekend. So, that was that. I actually released more than what became the first book. The first book goes up until June, I think June 10th of what I released, but I released it all the way through July. So I actually got into the second book, and I essentially, the people who actually read it on in the serialized format, I essentially left them with Who Shot JR. So I feel bad, and I need to make sure I get the second book/series out sooner rather than later.
So there is a cliffhanger, but I'm familiar with the story and it's worth it.
Thank you.
And you know, similar to you, I started very young writing comic strips, so which is a form of life story.
Nice.
So I definitely understand where you're coming from. Plus, when I was in college, I would come home and Mom would be watching Days of Our Lives, so I kind of got hooked on that for a while.
Yeah, when they're all in the background, it's hard not to. After a few days, you just get caught up in it.
Yeah, even my dad's company shut down for a month, and if you know my dad, who's very conservative, and he admitted at the end of the month that he had become addicted to these soap operas, because back in the day, that's all that there was during the daytime.
Right.
So that was kind of funny, but most of them are gone now.
Most of them are gone. We've got 4 left in our country, yeah.
Is Days of Our Lives one of them?
Days of Our Lives is one of them. And there was just a big brouhaha about how NBC, they had shut down production and they had not renewed anybody's contracts.
Mm-hmm.
But they had 8 months in the vault already. They were 8 months ahead in their taping. And because of fan reaction, apparently, and the like, NBC went ahead and greenlit another year of Days of Our Lives. So they're going to get back to it.
Well, I finally stopped watching after they had to do an exorcism on Marlena.
Yeah, I remember that. I didn't watch Days of Our Lives at the time, but anybody who paid attention to soap operas at the time remembers that.
Yeah, that pushed me to the limit. I had to stop.
It was the Moldavian Massacre, if you remember that from Dynasty.
Yes, I do.
So it was where everybody was like, okay, that's too much.
Yeah.
Let this go now.
Yep. They all seem to reach a point where, okay, we've gone too far.
Exactly.
Now, I don't get the opportunity to read all of the books featured on this show, to be honest, but I read your daily serials early in the year and thoroughly enjoyed them. Okay.
Well, thank you.
The twists and the turns and the madcap characters. I believe I've told you before, they reminded me of the groundbreaking series Soap.
Yes, you did say that, which I was so honored because that was such a fantastically fun show.
Oh, it was a hysterical show. And your story really reminded me of it. Now, it revolves much around Sebastian Seaford, who you mentioned.
Right.
What kind of man is he? Tell us about Sebastian.
He is really complicated. And I kind of have to be careful because he's not the man he appears to be at the beginning. I do a lot of, with Sebastian in particular, I do a lot of leading the audience to think certain ways about him. And the rug sort of gets pulled out from underneath the readers when everything comes to light. So I would say from the beginning, I would say he is definitely a kind of a manipulative and rather selfish human being. But I believe from the author's standpoint, you know, he's not vindictive or cruel or malicious in any way. He's just, I mean, I can be pretty selfish. I'm manipulative myself, but, you know, it's not necessarily.
Can't we all?
Yeah, right. So that's what I would say about him. He certainly does feel, you certainly did great regret at, I mean, he had been married. He has a family. He has this whole Seaford family. So he had been married for 22, I think, years. And his wife, Victoria, was completely just blindsided when he came out of the closet, which I think is about 10 years before the novel starts. But she hasn't let it go. It's not something she's been very angry about that, very, very angry about that. Because he'd been having an affair with someone who was a good friend of both of them for most of that, their last decade of marriage. And so she doesn't take that very well at all.
And you said he's 50?
He's 55.
55, and his husband is 23?
Yes. Well, they get engaged.
Engaged,
sorry. So, yeah, okay. Yeah, they get it. It begins the very start, yeah, with him announcing the engagement. And his previous husband had just died from cancer 6 months, maybe 9 months. I can't remember now. I think he'd been diagnosed 9 months. Yeah, and he had died 6 months previously. So the whole family is sort of shaken and feel like this boy is perhaps manipulating their father. And that's where the mystery kind of starts right up front, because I let the audience in on the fact that Alex has a past in Chicago that he wants to keep hidden, but somebody in Harmony Haven knows what that is because they slip a note under his door, you know, an anonymous note that tips him off that they know what his past is, that he wants to keep hidden. So everybody, quite honestly, although I don't pursue it right from the start, everybody in the book has a secret that they want to keep held. And what the series will be for me is just letting those secrets come out throughout each book.
That's the fun of it.
It is the fun of it, at least for me. And I know we were going to say that the second book that I'm working on right now is a full-on murder mystery, which I'd always known from the start of writing that I wanted to do. And a lot of the first book sets the tone, sets the groundwork for the murder in the second book, even though the audience doesn't necessarily know it. A lot of groundwork is being laid in the first book for what's to come and who's to get killed in the second book, which was fun. Like I said, it doesn't happen in the first book. I kind of finished the first book, not so much with a cliffhanger. There's a little bit of one, but I kind of wrap up I definitely wrap up the main mystery of the first book. Mm-hmm. But since it's a series, there are a few threads, you know, that will keep going. So it doesn't get to the murder, but the people who read it serialized got to the murder. And this character that ends up being murdered became one of those characters that people loved to hate so much. My beta readers questioned it. They're like, do you really want to kill this character off? Because they're really great to hate. But I said, yeah, I definitely want to do a murder. And when it happened, the response was that I got was really fun from people that were just, thank God you killed the person. I'm trying not to use a gender so that no one knows which one it is. Yeah, so hopefully the murder mystery is going to be a lot of fun. It is being beta read right now, and nobody has yet figured it out. So we'll see what happens by the time they get to the they get through it. So it'll be out next year for sure.
Looking at serials, it sounds like as if somebody would murder Alexis Carrington.
Yes, right. Or if they actually did murder rather than just shoot JR.
Yes.
They shot him, but he survived.
Yeah.
But I'm actually going to kill off my horrible human being.
And how did Sebastian come about his wealth?
Sebastian came about in that, you know, they say, okay, write what you know. And I thought this was the first thing I had written in 20 years. And so I really did thought, okay, well, you need to write, you know, from something that you know really well, which is why I also wrote about the LGBT community. But I have a little bit of experience in the self-help world. I won't say exactly how, but I volunteered for someone for a while who's big in the industry. And I think I had just finished that at the time. And I thought, you know, I know acting, but like, that's just so cliched about putting stuff in the acting world and everybody does that. And like, that's just boring. I don't want to do that. And I also am a yoga and meditation teacher. And I thought I could do that, but I didn't know where's really the drama in that. So I thought, oh, self-help, that really hasn't been mine. Because he can have this giant empire, you know, through his books and other people's books. And he's got yoga paraphernalia with his name on it. And, you know, so he's branched out. So he's got this giant empire. And that's how you can have the rich family. Because it is a little bit in my head, you know, based like on soap opera. And the fun of that is watching all of these really super rich people have terrible things happen to them. So that you just know that having all that money doesn't shield you from any of the drama of life.
You were an actor for many years.
I was.
How does one go from being a thespian to an author?
Well, you know, it was interesting. My time in grad school, although I didn't know it, which you mentioned, really paved the way because I was lucky I got my first, it's a 3-year program. They have 3 different acting teachers and you study with a different one each year. And my first year, I got the teacher who was really the most, I can't think of the word. Most of the way she taught was in getting us to create our own stories. And we had to create, I think, 5 different 20-minute pieces before we were ever given somebody else's script to do. So it started there. But then the Actor's Studio is so much about improvisation. And so even when you're working on a script, they're so big on taking it, working on it in class. So let's say if there's a big moment for your character in the play, but perhaps it happens before the play begins, or it happens off stage between scenes or something, they really encourage you to come in with your scene partner and do an improvisation on what that moment was, so that when you're then doing the actual part, you have acted it out with your partner. So it's a lot of creating our own stories. By just taking, you know, the circumstances and, you know, the character, you know, what has to happen. And then you just get up and you basically improvise a scene for 15 to 20 minutes. Now, when I decided to stop acting, I needed to do something creatively. And can talk about it as much detail as you want. Because I'm open about it. I was diagnosed with mental illness and I have a difficult time leaving my apartment. And so I needed something to do that I could do in my apartment. And so I went back to, I had written so much when I was a child. I thought, well, why don't I go back to that? And I took all the techniques that the Actor's Studio gave me as I just figure out in the chapters, because they were daily, they're so short, they're only about 800 words a piece. So I would figure out which character's point of view this chapter would be told from. And then I knew what story needed to be told, what points needed to be hit. And I basically just sit down at the computer and improvise like I would do at school. So it's easier for me as a writer to create the story. That comes really fast. I can do that in about an hour to an hour and a half. But then the editing process takes so long because I have to go back and I realize that sometimes I write things that contradict something that was said earlier, especially when doing something so long over such a long period of time. And that was where my beta readers came in a lot. They were very handy, and I told them, please look for any inconsistencies with characters or with settings and the like. So that's my basic writing process.
Well, you are very open about having mental illness, as myself. I'm very open about the fact that I have bipolar disorder, and we've discussed before that we both do so because we want to end the stigma.
Right.
Because many just don't understand. Are you willing to share what it's like to live with the disease and again, more how it took you to writing?
I am, sure. And my diseases, they're trying to come up with different names for them because I suffer from chronic depression and generalized anxiety disorder, as well as obsessive compulsive disorder. I've got the trifecta.
Triple hitter.
Exactly. Triple threat, as we would say in the acting world, which I was not, by the way. I was a singer who moved well. That's what we called it. I was in no way a dancer. But getting back on track. Mental illness, yes. So unfortunately, when people hear the words depression and anxiety, I mean, everybody can be sad or can be depressed, and everybody can become anxious about something. So it's trying to help people to understand that when you have the illness, the specific disease, the depression never goes away. The anxiety never goes away. It's every second of every day, I am anxious. My mind is anxious. I liken it to like a cat. I'm very jumpy. The smallest noise will make me literally cry out. Where a cat hisses and arches its back, I will have a physical and a vocal reaction. So living in New York City, you can imagine what that must be like. it's living with it. It's been only been I've had it my whole life. I remember now, I've been in therapy now for several years and on medication for several years. And I can now remember being a very, very young boy and telling all the adults in my life just that I'm frightened. I'm scared all the time. And I can probably say on this podcast, you know, it's a shame, but a couple of them that I've talked to in the last couple of years have said, yeah, we just always assumed that was because you were gay. Because, of course, all gay boys are sissies and pansies and, you know, that stereotype. So we just assumed it was because you were gay. So I either got ridiculed for it or I got flat out yelled at by my father for being so scared all the time. And so I learned at a very young age that this was something I was not supposed to discuss. And I got lots of coping techniques that I created as a 6, 7, 8-year-old boy. And the last couple of years has really been trying to figure out what those coping strategies are that really are unhealthy as an adult and replacing those with better coping mechanisms. But it's been very hard for my husband to live with me over the past couple of years, especially before I was medicated. I had been self-medicating with alcohol, which a lot of people do, because alcohol works exactly like the medicine that helps with anxiety. The difficulty is any medication that they have found that works with anxiety is just like alcohol. It's addictive. So it's not something you can take every day. And so when you're anxious every second of every day, you have to really have self-control over how much you take the medicine, and you have to use, you know, the breathing and meditation and relaxation as much more as you can and try to keep the medication to a minimum, which I am, knock wood, I will say I'm able to do because I'm very aware of the fact that it's addictive. And the awareness helps keep me making sure that I at least go a day I try for every week, but sometimes it's every 10 days without it. And I've been told I would have to take it every day for 4 to 6 weeks before it would become addictive. So as long as I go a day or 2 days in a row without taking it at times, I should be fine. So it affects, you know, your whole, just how you can relate to people. I'm literally afraid to leave my house. It affects my social life. I really need the medication in order to have any sort of social life whatsoever. So I sort of have to go in waves of sort of scheduling, seeing people all within a couple of days, and then making sure I have 2 or 3 days where I don't have anywhere I have to go so I can stay off the medication and just be in my safe environment with my two lovely dogs who help me to feel safe, and my husband.
As you kind of alluded to earlier, it seems like you took a negative, well, or what could be perceived as a negative. Well, it is a negative because it's not so much fun living with a mental illness.
Right.
But you turned it into a positive. It seems like your isolation is what was the catalyst towards writing.
It absolutely was the catalyst, and that I was stuck just sort of here by myself in my apartment. And I'd been a creative person, obviously, ever since I was very, very young. So I had to do something creative. And a good friend of mine, actually, I say sort of tough loved me on the street one day. And kind of just yelled at me and said, "You can't just stop being a creative person because you quit acting." And I was like, "You know, you're right."
So you took it and you decided to become a writer. Now, what surprised you most when you became a writer?
What surprised me most? I think how much enjoyment I got from it. I maybe because I hadn't done it for so long. What surprised me is that I feel like I'm still acting. I'm just acting alone in my apartment, and I'm acting every single part as I write and as I read. So maybe that's why I enjoy it. I think I just put my finger on the button as to why I enjoy it so much, because I really am still acting. I'm just doing it alone and then putting it into written form that I can then share without having to leave my house.
That's a great way to put it. Now, what would you say is your writing kryptonite?
My writing kryptonite is my ability is not the correct word. My tendency to be quite verbose. And so luckily, my forcing myself to only having the chapters be 800 words a day really helped me. Because originally they were 1600 words a day. And that was simply because I started doing it during National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo, which so many people do. And I think 1,611 words is, if you do that daily, you'll have 50,000 words at the end of the month, which is what their goal is. So I just started writing 1,600 word chapters, and I quickly realized, boy, I could never keep that up on a daily basis. And I thought about Armistead Maupin and Tales of the City, and I, of course, read all of those books, and for years, over and over and over again, I love them. And I thought, I wonder if I can find out easily how many words they are. And if not, I was going to actually type it out. But fortunately, Google knows everything. And I was able to see an interview with him where he said his were 800 words. And he said how difficult it was to crank out 800 words a day. And I was like, all right, well, if I'm trying 1600 and it was hard for him at 800, then we're knocking it back to at least 800. But it was a big help because I had 55 chapters written at that point. And so I took them and I either condensed them from 16 to 800 or I split them in half. But I noticed that it was more towards the end that I split them in half. And at the beginning, I really realized, you know, you can just cut this, you can cut this, you can cut this. I was just using too many words.
I think it's easier to cut, though, than to try and fill in if you write too short.
It's true. Just luckily, I never do. Because usually my 800 words usually end up around 900 to 1,000. And so after I've written, I still have to go back and take out a couple hundred, force myself to trim here and there.
And sometimes that hurts.
Sometimes it hurts. And with the book, I actually did go back and put in a couple of scenes that I really enjoyed and that I was really sorry to have to cut out and put it back into the book. Because I had the time.
Well, I've got to get off track here for a second and ask you, because you're such a Armistead Maupin fan, have you had the chance to see the newest Netflix show?
I sure have.
What are your thoughts on that?
Ultimately, I really enjoyed it. I didn't at the beginning, and it took me some time. I mean, right at the beginning, it was a lot of fun to see, well, without saying all the actors' names because I'll mess them up, seeing Marianne back and seeing Mrs. Madrigal back and seeing, what's her husband's name? Ex-husband's name? Brian Hawkins. seeing all those same actors still there was a lot of fun. I've always been a fan of Murray Bartlett for years and years and years. And so I was very excited about him playing Mouse. But it took me, I would say, I was going to watch the whole thing regardless, but it was probably about four or five episodes in where I really started to enjoy it. And by the end, I said, I think what they did, I really liked. And it surprised me. The mystery surprised me, mostly because I thought it was going to stick to the book, at which, of course, it doesn't. Yeah, and I won't say spoilers, but the...
Yep, I haven't seen it all.
Oh, you have not seen it all. All
right. I stopped after the third episode. I couldn't go any further, but now you've convinced me to keep going.
Well, maybe. Yeah.
The one thing I did enjoy was the new guy that played Mouse.
Yeah. 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 I've always loved
him.
That's
a whole different story. So.
Sure. Sure. For many reasons do we love that actor. Well, yeah, maybe you should. Yeah. Give it a try and see it definitely around four or five, it picked up for me, and I did like the way it ultimately ended. I thought it was good. Yeah.
I'll give it another try.
Okay.
So back on track to writing, I just had to ask.
Sure, sure, of course.
What authors have inspired you over the years?
Well, one that I will say is a writer and isn't an author of novels, but the soap opera that I watched for years and loved was As the World Turns. And there was a writer who is well-known in the soap opera world, Douglas Marland, who wrote it from like 85 until he died in 93. So he wrote it for a very long time. And he really was one of the best of the genre. And he inspired me a lot. I loved how he could take two different stories. Because my book really is kind of a soap. There are so many characters, and I'm telling three different stories at the same time, really four or five different stories. And I loved how he could take two stories and that seemed working with completely different people, and then they merged together, and you realized, oh, those two stories are actually the same one. He was just brilliant at being able to do that. And so I've really tried to emulate him with The Homos of Harmony Haven, that you don't realize that this other story that's happening with these other people has to do with the main story. So him, definitely. Agatha Christie, absolutely. I read pretty much everything of hers when I was a child. I just devoured her writing as a mystery writer. And another one is, who might not be so popular, is Mary Higgins Clark, who I stopped eventually because I felt like she just started churning them out so many that they just became so similar and not as strong. But boy, those first four or five books of hers I thought were just great suspense, thriller, mysteries that I've always enjoyed. So I would say those are my ones.
Now, you mentioned to me before that you may be re-releasing The Homos from Harmony Haven for free as a serial again.
And I have decided to go ahead and do that. Yes. So by the time this podcast airs, you can go to my website, which is thehomosofharmonyhaven.com. And on there, you'll be able to join the newsletter, subscribe to my newsletter. And essentially, and it'll be laid out on the website. Essentially, what joining the newsletter means is that the story will come to your inbox every morning. Probably at 7 a.m. because I can schedule the time. So because many people found it was great to read with their morning coffee. People liked to read it on the train, on their commute here in New York. So I like to release it early morning. And some people liked to read it before they went to bed, as they got into bed at night, because it just literally takes 5 minutes. It's a quick little read. So I will, as a sense, quote unquote, re-air it, rerun it, sending it to people's inboxes. Starting January, let's see, it's Monday. So Monday, January 6th, that will begin again.
This show's going to air on Thursday in a few days. So,
right.
So January's a little ways off.
But sign up now. Go to the website now and sign up, and it'll just come. It'll surprise you on Monday, January 6th.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood what you were saying.
Yeah, so. Just subscribe to the newsletter. Just go to the website, subscribe to the newsletter, and essentially the newsletter is going to be the story. And it'll say that specifically on the website when you go to it.
So I will say, if you're the type that has to sit down and read a full book overnight, maybe it's not for you, but I really enjoyed these every morning. It was a great way to start the day and a lot of fun.
And if you, thank you very much. If you are someone who likes to read a book overnight, though, you can still buy the book on Amazon. So, and I'm kind of planning on at the end of every chapter that I release to just say, you know, are you getting annoyed at having to wait the weekend to find out what happens? You can go buy the first book on Amazon right now and you can read it to your heart's content. A couple of reviews that I had, they stated that they, I think it's like, because it's like Tales of the City, each chapter is only 3 pages. You just keep saying, oh, I'm going to read another one. Oh, I'm going to read another one. Oh, I'm going to read another one. And a couple of reviewers said they ended up staying up all night reading it because they just couldn't stop. So if you like that, you can just buy the book.
Well, I'll say that you offering it for free is very generous. And also, it sounds like an excellent marketing plan. So good on you.
Thanks.
Well, now we get to the fun part of the show.
Okay, great.
We're going to get to awkward questions authors get.
I love it.
Okay. So let's, you're familiar with the show, so you know how this goes.
Yep.
So what I'm going to do is spin the wheel, and we're going to see what question you get.
Okay, fantastic.
So let's give it a spin here. Okay, you got one of my favorites.
This is great.
Your question is, why don't you write erotica? That's where all the big money is.
Well, depending on how far you have gotten into the Halls of Harmony Haven, there is a little erotica in it, I have to say. One of Sebastian's children, the youngest, who is away at college at the beginning of the series, but comes home at the end of the semester and sort of shakes up everybody's world, is a little R-rated, shall we say. And he has a little R-rated sex life, which does get into it. So with the Homos of Harmony Haven, you really get a little of everything. You get a little mystery, you get a little romance, you get a little erotica, you get a little suspense. It's got something for everybody.
You can't lose.
Exactly.
So once again, the guest is Andrew Schultz, and as we've mentioned several times, the name of the book is The Homos of Harmony Haven. For those that want to purchase the book rather than do the serial, what's the best place to go to purchase the book?
The best place, you can either, my website has a purchase page on it, but it's on Amazon. And it's a part of Amazon Kindle Unlimited during the month of January. It will come up, it'll stop in January. So if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can read it for free until the end of January. And it's $3.99 otherwise on Amazon Kindle.
And what is the easiest way if somebody wants to reach you?
If they want to reach me, is through the website. There is a contact form on there, which goes right to my email, which is also just thehomosofharmonyhaven@gmail.com. So I try to keep everything easy, just everything, the whole name.
Okay, well, thank you. It's been wonderful having you on the show, Andrew.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. Hopefully I'll come back for the second book.
I look forward to it, and good luck on that second book.
Thank you so much.
All right, you take care.
You too.